Now, I believe that those plans have to be very materially improved. Also, I have been one of the principal factors in the anti-poverty program, which has given community organizations money, like Bedford-Stuyvesant, which I founded with Robert Kennedy and John Lindsay. And generally speaking, I'm held in the very highest esteem by our older citizens. Now, when you use the word about Ms. Holzman, which I think is the proper one, not what she wants to give them, what can she give them? And there I'm on very solid ground. I can give them a great deal more, because I can deliver a great deal more. You know, for years I was the ranking member of the Committee on Labor and Human Resources. I'm still the senior. I'm still on that committee. And that's where the delivery has to take place. They look after health and housing and for the aged. The Older Americans Act comes out of the Labor and Human Resources Committee. So I wouldn't doubt that Elizabeth wants to do as much as I want to do, if not more. It could be more, but, you know, I'm sure she...
Her heart's good in that. But from the point of view of delivering it, no. Wouldn't begin to compare with what I can do and have done.
So I don't think you'll indulge us for another couple of minutes.
Yeah.
I have no problem. I'm going to vote for you.
I'll tell you why. Not only that you deserve the vote, if you were certainly on the Republican ticket, there would be no question, as was said here. I'm going to vote for you because I have to also square my conscience. To me, whether Elizabeth Holzman has a congenital block somewhere that she can vote for it, or it's ideological, to me, her votes and her attitude towards defense is above everything else unacceptable. Out of this goes many, all the problems of the world that you decide that Israel, but America is, America has to be defended if there is no defense question.
And this is above all important. I want to ask you whether not really what you are going to do, what you can do, that we know. What do you know or think of the Carter position in case of a second term regarding the Middle East, Israel? Do you know anything that we don't? Speculation. His promises now. And second, personally, now that you are not on the Republican ticket and you can only be elected as an independent country for a while, do you have to stress your support for Reagan? You know that to us, I must say, Reagan is an upper. Even more than, of course, than Dama. Otto could do, even if he were elected, would be to degrade perhaps the office of senator. But Reagan can do an awful lot of damage both for social welfare and in so many other areas. Would you please comment?
Well, I'll just let me recapitulate the question.
One, why my support of Reagan? Why do I have to hit Reagan? And what's the element?
The other one is really what is the position of the Carter administration
on Israel?
On Israel,
yeah. I think I can.
I'll answer both of them.
Let me answer the latter first. I am a Republican, and I do have a very deep belief in the private enterprise system. And I would first turn to the private enterprise system for the solution to the problem. And I have done that all my life. I'm very hard-headed. I'm not afraid of contracting debts where it's necessary
for the security of the country
or for the stability of the country. So that's maybe a difference with other Republicans. But fundamentally, I'm hard-headed about money. So, I come by this Republicanism. I've been a Republican since 1952 with LaGuardia. When he joined his club, through on East 72nd Street. The reason I'm for Reagan, and the reason I reiterate my stand for Reagan is this. One, I have to have some constituency after all. And remember, I did get 44% even of those hard-shell Baptists who voted in the Republican primary. So I'm not, you know, a man without a constituency. Secondly, if elected, I wish to have all my seniority. And I've got to join the Republican conference, and I don't want any trouble about it. Now, the precedents are all with me. But, you know, precedents can be broken by a vote in the conference. 41 senators, or whatever we have, can vote differently. So,
who's president?
So I have to be very careful. If I'm running, I owe the people delivery for what I say I'll do. And so I have to watch my flanks and rear. Secondly, I really believe that that Carter is so used up with the country, and by the way, that percentages in which he is incompetent and unlucky, I can't give you. I don't, can't tell you it's 50-50 or 60-40 or 40-60, but he is unlucky.
As well as?
You know, well as very serious lacks in his comments. So, I am for an alternative, and knowing how the Congress works, and being myself the author of the War Powers Resolution, as you know, which is a very great restraint on a president's making war, I feel that the country needs a change, and that we're not running all that much of a risk with Reagan. Now, that's my feeling. And I know him, I've talked to him. I'm not one of his partisans.
On foreign policy.
That's right. On war and peace. And that the Congress rules by coalitions. You know, it's not, we're not a party-ridden country. Once you organize the Congress and cast that one vote, from then on it's essentially liberal coalitions, sectional coalitions, conservative coalitions. That's the way the Congress runs. And in that maze, I assure you, I have a good sense of direction.
So that's that. Now it's the Carter misery. Interestingly enough, Reagan, congenitally, is more favorable to Israel than Carter. You know, he's a conservative Republican.
And the tradition of Taft, Milligan, Langer, Wiley, has all been very favorable to strong support of Israel. Bridges, any one of them. Whereas with Carter, the you know, the religiosity worries me from the point of view of,
you know, really congenital support. How he would operate, I believe, is the following.
I believe that he feels that the mark in history he can leave is peace in the Middle East. That he's on the way to it
with the Camp David Accords and the Israel-Egypt peace treaty.
Time has proved, I'm talking to you from his point of view, how he looks, not mine or yours, but time has proved his propositions to be right. Therefore, the application of some degree of decisiveness, that's what he would call it, to Israel's acceptance of those propositions is justified by history and by the security of the United States, and indeed in terms of the oil of the Western world. So he will apply it. He now has that, you know, to speak very quiet. Goldwater speaks very quietly, and Helms speaks very quietly, too. He'll speak very quietly, but he'll do his utmost to carry it through. That's what I think.
I'm really Jesse, do you just want to follow up? Reagan will be supportive.
Sure, it worries.
He comes in and he finds himself influenced by that.
Worries me like anything. Why do you think I'm running? I mean, you know, why do you think I'm running? I have no fear of presidents. You know that. And, you know, a very senior senator with a lot of good connections can bring a president to heel. And
I think it will
be a real loss from that point of view.
I'm not there.
And I may not be. I'll tell you myself. This isn't
sure thing.
Not at all.
We're not publishing this.
I know.
You have doubts.
I'm just telling you.
But I feel it my duty to try.
If you had a very good chance, we would have no problem. The problem is only that here.
I understand.
Yes, a press conference is usually ended by someone saying, thank you.
Thank you. I got to go down to Alexander.
Of one of the great members of the government of the United States, one of the great public servants of our time. And we are most privileged and honored to have with us today the senior senator from New York State, Senator Jacob Javits.
Thank you, Mr. Farkas. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I deeply appreciate your reception. I appreciate as much the comment about not opening an Alexander store without me. It's happened, but it was an accident. And I just made it, notwithstanding our city's traffic, and I'm delighted. And I'm also delighted to greet Ambassador Farkas, who is here, who with her husband, Ambassador Farkas and her husband, who was the founder of Alexander's, were very, very close friends of my family, myself, my wife, my brother, and his wife. I came because it's a great privilege to welcome enterprise. New York City has been distinguished by merchant princes, and the Farkas family has furnished us with a great example of family business in this city. And the enterprise of coming down here in this remarkable new World Trade Center, which reaches out to the world for commerce, and if New York is to make it, foreign commerce, exports and imports, and the adequate use of this port will represent an enormous element in accomplishing success for New York. And while visitors can admire Broadway and Fifth Avenue and Park Avenue, we New Yorkers, know the far reaches of the South Bronx and of Brownsville and East New York and Bedford-Stuyvesant and Harlem, where so much needs to be done. And we realize even when you add in a percentage for honest graft, we realize that this city needs enormous support from the nation and enormous support from the whole world. We're in a fair way to get it. And Alexander's has been a very great leader in that regard. I hope we appreciate the merchandising which is done here and done in the retail business in New York generally, of which this is such a very high and wonderful example. And so I join with you, and I see quite a few of my colleagues in government here, in congratulating the Farkas family and wishing them well for their enterprise and expressing our pride and satisfaction that they belong to us, that they do their utmost to aggrandize our city, and I can assure you that New Yorkers will fully cooperate with you in trying, if by your merchandising you give them the opportunity, as you always have, to make a great success of this store, as they already have of your store at 58th and Lexington. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Senator, and thank you for being with us. I'd like to introduce to you two of our city council persons, Ms. Greitzer and Mr. Stern, who have joined us today. And we're also very pleased to have with us as a representative.
Our building opening is complete without a ribbon cutting. So if you will step over here, we'll now have the official traditional ribbon cutting, which will mark the official opening of Alexander's World Trade Center. Thank you so much for being with us.
Attacks the motto.
It has. Steve is working on that right now, Steve Matthews, but it's going to be...
I haven't seen it.
It's the response, really, to D'Amato's
crime program.
Crime thing, yeah. That he issued yesterday. The gist of it being, you know, that he is not...
Elaborate. At some point, study the situation?
You know, following the psychological track of any man or woman is an impossibility. The fact is I'm in the race. I'm staying in the race, period, and I put it in writing.
Senator, here is now a couple of weeks before election day. What is the status of your campaign right now?
My campaign is going forward with great activity. I'm appearing. I'm speaking. We're on television. I'm traveling. I'm doing all the things a candidate's supposed to do.
How about the polls, Senator? Your reaction to them?
Well, I think the polls are improving for me, and I believe they'll improve more because I believe that people are getting to understand the shortcomings of my opponents, and in me, they've got a certain quantity.
In other words, they know what they're buying with
they
you.
They know, exactly. They know what they're buying, and I believe they want to buy it.
Are you concerned, Senator, that you and Representative Holzman could split a portion of the electorate and help Mr. D'Amato be elected?
The New York electorate is a very alert electorate, and they know how to split tickets, and they've done it many times before. And if they want me, they'll find me and vote for me.
Senator, do you want to talk about the crime thing, or do you want to wait till you see the pictures?
I think I better see what it's about.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate that very much. And I promise to do exactly what Mr. Hinkle told me I should do, which is speak for 5 minutes. This is made for a taller man than me. There we are.
There we go.
That's fine. Thank you. Just fine. And I shall confine myself to 5 minutes, and I apologize to my colleagues in government and those who are aspiring for interrupting, and I will watch the time. Mr. Hinkle has been very nice to us, my office tells me, and so he asked especially that I come by, and I'm delighted to do it. And I hope very much it doesn't interfere with anybody's presentation. My own situation is a rather unique one. It will be necessary to vote for me on the line of a minority party, the Liberal Party. I am on that line. I do not have any connection with the rest of that ticket. They understand that perfectly. In that I'm not connected with Mr. Anderson, who is a friend of mine, but in this particular campaign, I'm not standing with him, but standing on my own. And I seek the support of the people of the state, notwithstanding the fact that my own party has not chosen to nominate me in its primary, because I believe that New York has so much invested in me. That it would be very tragic to waste it, especially at a time when it is so urgently needed. I'm sure you will be enlightened very materially here on the basic issues which face us. And of course, we are so well aware of at home of the grave strain on our society, let alone our economy, of completely unacceptable inflation and unemployment. We need to do an enormous job in modernizing the American business machine, and that will take both the government tax effort
and private enterprise, ingenuity, and reconciliation. We have very grave problems abroad in that we are hostage to the OPEC countries in terms of oil, who now seek to dictate our political judgments by the fact that they may grant or withhold oil which is essential to the operation of our industrial machine and that of the other industrialized countries of the world. And to add to the confusion and difficulty, war has already broken out in the Middle East, which is the flashpoint of the whole world, and the grave danger of Soviet-U.S. confrontation appears before us. For 24 years, I've represented this state, longer than that, than any senator in its history. And the people owe me nothing for that. It's been a great honor and privilege to do that. But I've now acquired assets of great importance to our state, assets of seniority, which make me the ranking member of the Foreign Relations Committee, which has the most to do with war and peace in the Congress, Foreign Relations Committee of the Senate, which approves ambassadors, recommends the ratification of treaties, and is second only in importance to the President of the United States in respect of these very grave issues of peace or war. We have problems about money in the world, with gold at an astronomical figure because people have no faith in paper. That's really what it means. And yet our whole world is based on paper. The base of gold is too narrow upon which to premise the trade of the world or the operation of the world. And so somehow this credit must be restored and this credibility must be restored. And then you have enormous revolutionary currents sweeping the world, able to create chaos or aggression, as in Iran and Afghanistan, respectively. So the assets which I have at the service of the state impelled me to offer them again, because no one knows better than I how dire is the danger. And I am going about the state, because I don't believe anything ought to be taken for granted, doing my utmost to discuss these issues with the people and to persuade them that it's the right way to go, that the way of substance and of performance is the right way to go. Now, last point, and it's very important. We were, for a long time, the state that generated all the money. And for a long time, we were the main financial spigot for the federal government. Now the roles have changed. We are still a big revenue producer because we have so many things that produce enormous revenue, ports, banks, stock exchanges, etc. But also we are now something of a client state. We need so much, and so much has moved away from us, which we're anxious to get back, as especially the care of a Chamber of Commerce like your own. And it's going to take a lot of doing to keep New York in the right position to get help from the federal government and also to make New York attractive enough so that it may keep and attract business here. I have, I would say just one word on each. There isn't a county or a town or a city in this state that because I have been there so long and have relationships which are created over time with the government people, government departments, and my colleagues that hasn't benefited in a housing project, retaining a plant, water project, aid to a school or schools, an arts project, from this tenure which I've had in the Senate. And correlatively, in terms of legislation, we are beginning to change. So many of these formulae which have operated to deny us a fair share of federal aid. And this extends from higher education, where we just have a new higher education bill in which we get a much better break, to the way in which urban mass transit is treated, when we were highly discriminated against, and we now have a new formula which allows us to get credit for the mileage which is under urban mass transit in the distribution of federal funds, instead of having the distribution solely on a per capita income basis, which is very discriminatory to us. So that's the matter before our electorate. I hope very much that people recognizing their own best interests and substance, the dire situation we're in at home and abroad, and the fact that my reputation is not built on mirrors, I've actually delivered, and I want to continue to because I know it's so badly needed in terms of our state and our nation, that our people will find me on the ballot and will send me back to do the job that I feel I know so well how to do to the Senate of the United States. And again, I'd like to thank my colleagues in government, as I say, and those aspiring for their indulgence, and to thank Mr. Hinkle and the chairman for allowing me these few minutes. Thank you all.
See these polls to be so mercurial so far as not to be too instructive. And I also have found, and I didn't discuss that in the short time I had, a very serious imperfections, not only in Mr. D'Amato, who I think is very rigid, ultra-conservative, and is not at all representative of New York, but also Ms. Holtzman. I never really knew her record particularly intimately. I had no occasion to. I knew her as a young, intelligent, hardworking young woman whom we helped. I helped, and my office helped in some of the things she undertook, because the job is so big in the Congress that I encourage congressmen to take pieces of it, and I assist them. I found in that some problems, and that I don't think she was solicitous enough of the fact that in order to, that New York has to keep things going, that we can't be so rigid that we'll destroy them. And she came pretty close to doing that in the summer food program. But I didn't, you know, it was not a big deal to me. But I do believe that the strange lacunae she seems to have about defense and security, raises very serious questions in my mind as to whether she ought to be senator from New York. So I'm running and actively, and will do my utmost to win. That's my answer now.
Any other questions?
Sends more taxes to the federal government proportionately that it receives back, and that other states such as Texas and other states in the South and the Southwest and California are receiving more back proportionately than they send to New York. Is there any hope in the near future that there will be an equalization of this situation?
Yes, it is already being equalized. 4 years ago, we got back 85 cents on every dollar we sent to Washington. Today, the figure is 96 cents. So there has been a material improvement, and there has to be more, because we are a very, very big revenue producer. And just like we're willing to accept deficits in recessions and hope to get surpluses when there's a recovery, so with New York. New York has to be helped into a better economic situation until it is again a big revenue producer as indeed it can be. Thank you, Governor. Thank you.
As it is vital to this nation's security to end our dependence on oil that comes out of the OPEC cartel countries, it is essential to have new conservation programs. We can save about 1.5 million barrels of oil a day, which is a quarter of what we import, through a mass transit program out of roughly $30 billion from the windfall profits tax, and in order to induce cars which will go 50 miles per gallon of gasoline, we need an automobile efficiency savings trust fund. I announce today that I will introduce legislation for both purposes.
This is Alan Nicholson with the Javits Campaign. Campaigning in New York City today, Senator Javits released his white paper on energy, warning that a cutoff of Mideast oil would be disastrous. He proposed a broad-based program and said he had asked the U.S. Comptroller General to investigate New York's home heating oil markets. The cut runs 52 seconds and begins on my count. 3, 2, 1.
This nation's security demands that we end our dependence on oil from the OPEC cartel. And for this reason, I'm proposing to save 1,400,000 barrels of oil every day, and I'm also calling on the Comptroller General of the United States to investigate whether home heating oil markets in New York are open and competitive. My program would, out of the windfall profits tax, establish an energy conservation mass transit program to improve and expand mass transit facilities and provide rebates to car buyers who buy energy-efficient U.S. cars. Our energy policy is top national priority. I'll do my utmost in Washington to see that this region and this nation always have an adequate supply to function.